Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil, el envío al área, el remate, y ahí está el primer tanto del partido. No lo celebra, por supuesto, Aaron Ramsey. 0-1 para el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. We did get some applause.
We did get applause.
Hurrah!
Before we start, I was going to say backstage, but we weren't really backstage. We just stood there at the side, weren't we? But before
side
we started,
stage.
I wanted Andrew to come on and introduce me, so I got my own applause, but that idea was quickly discarded.
Yeah, I refused completely.
Fair enough.
Thank you all for coming out, and welcome to another live Arscast Extra.
And it's live.
It's live. A beautiful day in London. Normally when we do these things, it's wintry and dark, and we're in a cavernous room with no view of the outside. So it's nice to be here with you all on this beautiful day. I can see trees out the window.
Yeah.
Takes my mind off football.
I mean, normally when we do this, I'm in my bedroom, so this is a massive upgrade. I mean, there are other people here, I can socialise.
And you're wearing clothes?
I'm wearing clothes, a big difference from the usual show.
The other thing that we wanted to do was tell you that we've got you here under false pretenses, because I'm sure you've heard us talk over the last little while about our love for Hamon Ruffles. These are Hamon Ruffles, and basically what we're going to do is sit here for 90 minutes and eat them while you watch.
Yeah, and you've paid for the privilege.
Absolutely.
I mean, the reality is, Andrew, we should come clean. We did look into getting Hamon Ruffles to sponsor this show.
We did. We did.
There was absolutely no interest from them whatsoever.
I couldn't believe it.
I can't believe it. We fared so well with the jam companies.
Yeah. I still have my apricot jam.
I'll be honest, guys. I'm not eating it.
No.
It's too much of it.
Yeah, it's too much. You just have to stick your paw in it like a bear.
Yeah, yeah. Very much like a bear.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've sourced these especially.
Well, James went out of his way this week to find a shop somewhere in London that sold Hamon Ruffles, and it was quite the adventure.
It's in Tulse Hill. There's a Portuguese community. Who knew?
Yeah.
But I then bought a bin bag full of Ruffles. I was kept walking around London with a dozen bags of Ruffles, and at one point a man came up to me. I don't know if he was suspicious, he thought it was body parts or something, and he said, "What's in your bag?" And I said, "Crisps," and he just walked away. I don't know if he believed me or not. I don't think it matters.
Maybe he was a peanut man.
Yeah, he was a peanut guy. He was furious.
He could have been that guy.
He was from the jam company. He felt betrayed.
But what we're going to do this evening, because it's an evening of love and sharing and happiness before the FA Cup final, we're going to give some of you guys the chance to win some Hamon Ruffles. I mean, I don't know if it gets any better than that.
No, I mean, it could change your lives, guys.
Exactly. You know, some people go to a live event to be entertained by talent or great singing.
Erudite analysis.
Exactly. We have crisps to buy you off. But with us tonight, we're going to have a couple of guests. So we'll start introducing the guests.
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
I think we should. First up, he is a man who does have an actual name. I know his name, but on the podcast, he's always referred to as the man from East Lower because he sits in the East Lower. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the man from East Lower. Come on up here. You need a microphone.
Hello.
Hello.
It works.
It does work. Your voice is out there. Thank you very much for coming along. We should tell people your name, shouldn't we?
My name is Jim.
Jim.
I do have a name, yeah.
It's underwhelming, isn't it, when you find out?
I can be James if you prefer. But
no, we've already got
thanks,
a James.
Mate, I've got that one covered.
Yeah. It's all right. Our second guest this evening, you might know him from another podcast called The Tuesday Club. It's Tayo Papula. Come on up.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
All right.
Yeah. You're dressed for the occasion, at least.
For the crisps. I'm dressed for radio, man. Don't worry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. Well, thank you. Thank you guys for coming along and to share this discussion with us. We should keep an eye on the time, actually.
I'll do that.
You
that,
do that. You
that
do
could be, I get all the important jobs, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
What time is it?
No, it's 7:08.
7:08.
But okay. Probably not when you're listening to this.
No. That would be good if people listened to it.
It's exactly 7:08. That'd be uncanny. Yeah.
What the darn? Is it live? It is live. But anyway, we're here on the eve of an FA Cup final. We're obviously going to talk about the FA Cup and what it might mean and everything. Why are you laughing?
Just what it might mean.
What would it mean?
What it might mean is absolute Armageddon destruction and having to hide for the summer, although it could be another great day.
Well, look, we had discussions earlier about keeping this on a cheery note. Maybe. the FA Cup final is something to be cherished. And I want to start, obviously, by talking about some FA Cup memories, some of the great FA Cup memories we might have. Jim, we were both born in 1971, an auspicious year for Arsenal and the FA Cup. My dad was at that final.
You don't look a day over 45.
Thank you very much. Thanks. But so I feel a very strong connection to the 1971 FA Cup final, even though I wasn't yet born. But by 1979, I was very much aware of the FA Cup final, Arsenal versus Manchester United. I'm sure many of you here remember that that great day. And it was wonderful. Arsenal were 2-0 up. And I was the happiest child alive. 2-0 up in the FA Cup final. And then Manchester United scored twice. And I thought, oh, you fuckers. This is not what's supposed to happen. There was only 3 minutes to go. We were supposed to see this game out and win the cup easily. Of course, I didn't understand that this was Arsenal.
Arsenal, of course.
This was Arsenal.
Different
this was
rules.
My first introduction to the Arsenalness of Arsenal. But before I had any time to get too dismayed by it, obviously, we scored that great late goal from Alan Sunderland. Do you remember that game well?
It's really strange. I don't at all. I think a switch flipped in 1980 for me. I don't have any recollections of 79, but 80, I've got it all because I remember crying when Ricks missed the penalty in the Cup Winners' Cup final.
Yeah.
My dad said that I could come down and watch the penalties. I'd had to go to bed before. He cut me down, we lost, and I cried.
Right.
But and then I remember watching the Cup final, the FA Cup final, which we lost, and so pretty good way to start.
Well, start doesn't mean to go on, is it?
Oh, wow. Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that is pretty brutal. I remember that because I remember listening to the Cup Winners' Cup final on the radio. We had one of those pieces of furniture. It looked like a piece of furniture, but you lift it up on one side, it was a record player and a radio, and then the other side was a high-fangled cassette deck.
So futuristic.
Yes. You don't know what cassettes are.
Guy, I've got no idea what's happening now. No.
Do you remember 79 Cup Final?
79 Cup Final? No, I was... I'm a bit younger than you, so definitely not. Let's put it that way. I'll just leave it at that.
Shit. Okay. Well, it was great. In the end, 79 FA Cup Final was great. 1980 Cup Final, not so much because of Trevor Brooking. I could never, ever hear the word stooping header again without thinking of Trevor Brooking and getting flashbacks.
Until Keith Houchin turned it into an art form in 1987 against them lot.
Well, that's true. That was a good Cup Final as well. For different reasons. James, what's the your first FA Cup final memory or FA Cup memory?
Well, I was born in 1986. So I don't...
Shit.
Yeah, I know. Guys, it's been a very difficult 30 years. There have been many obstacles to overcome.
Yeah, but you're still only 30, you know, that's...
Yeah,
anyway, let's not...
So I don't really remember even the early 90s ones particularly well. I've got sort of, you know, glimpses of Linegan and what have you, but it's not clear for me until 1998.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're chatting away about these 70s ones, and I really feel... Obviously, I know Alan Sunderland. I've seen it so many times.
You've heard of the 70s.
Of course, I remember. Yeah, I'm vaguely aware of them as a notion.
Yeah.
But the actual game itself, can't go with you on that.
Right, okay. Well, that pretty much fucks the rest of it.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more then about FA Cup and FA Cup final memory. So if 98 was the one you remember first,
yeah.
That was a good one. That was a good double.
The one I remember most fondly is the Chelsea final. of 2000, which is pertinent, I guess.
Yes.
2002?
Uh-huh.
There we go. Ray Parler.
It's only Ray Parler.
It's only Ray Parler. Freddie Ljungberg as well.
Mm.
A brilliant goal that's sort of lost amidst all the admiration for the Ray Parler goal. That Freddie Ljungberg goal is a hell of a goal.
Well, I mean, one of the best things about that Freddie Ljungberg goal, I mean, there was obviously the finish into the top corner, which was brilliant. And was it not that goal where Lee Dixon was running behind the goal to celebrate as Freddie wheeled away, leaving John Terry flat on his face?
Yeah.
A young John Terry sprawled on the ground, having a terrible time.
He started as he meant to go on.
He absolutely
as well.
Did, didn't he?
Yeah.
He really did.
Which is just good to see. I almost hope that there's an injury early in the final and that he gets on.
I hope it comes in the 26th minute.
26th. That would be great, yeah. Because it took him 2 minutes to get off, and it'll take Gary Cahill longer on that stretcher, I imagine.
Yeah.
It'd be great to see him get on for one last slip. Wouldn't it be just one last farewell slip from John Terry?
I think he deserves it.
Yeah, he does deserve it.
Not just for his whole career of being an absolute bastard, but what he did last weekend when he came off after the 28th minute.
Yeah.
Not 26.
What did you make of the John Terry pantomime at the weekend, Jim?
Well, it was all about, it released some statement, didn't he, yesterday? And it was I. So, you know.
He did.
Ooh, a little bit political.
The podcast just got political.
A little bit of politics.
It's a bit weird. If it was me, and obviously that's a hideous thought now that I've thought about it, but if it was me, I wanted to play the whole game.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I don't know. Very it odd. Could be like he's a massive twat. I don't know.
It could be.
I'm just guessing.
We'll never know. We'll never know, guys.
We will never know. So, Tayo, given that you're a little bit younger than me, share with us, please, your first FA Cup memory or your first FA Cup final memory.
Well, first FA Cup final that I sort of really properly engaged with is 93. And really, I don't really remember much of the first game. I remember the replay.
Yeah.
And Wrighty's goal over, you know, the Wrighty on goal, the through ball from that. I mean, obviously it's about Andy Linnigan, but being deeply, deeply in love with Ian Wright then and now, then that's kind of what I remember. Another FA Cup memory, which is my first, when you asked me that the other day, I was just thinking about listening on the radio to Wrighty's chip against Yeovil.
Right.
And then seeing that on Match of the Day that night as well, and again, just falling further in love with Ian Wright. So yeah, 93 is my is the first one that I kind of really engaged with. 98 felt a little bit boring actually, because it was quite easy. The final was quite easy. That was 2-0 and Anelka, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was Overmars and Anelka. But the first one that we all went to was the John Terry slip final. So
yeah.
And that was...
It never felt just, like we were going to lose in 98,
no.
Did it? Because we were so good. That was such a good team, and it was on such a good run.
Yeah. And Newcastle, they hadn't had a great season, had they? I don't remember, but they were in no great shape at the time.
I have no idea.
You don't care.
My Newcastle knowledge is minimal.
I miss Cardiff. I did really enjoy those run of Cardiff finals. We had a lot of good times down there.
Especially John Terry.
Yeah, no one's really mentioned that, but he did really fall over.
It's almost like it's a theme that might run through this podcast this evening. I don't quite know. So look, when we're looking at this weekend's final, I suppose we have to try and analyse it a little bit. And as a professional who writes about Arsenal every day, I'm looking at our lack of defenders and thinking, uh-oh. Uh-oh.
That's your professional opinion.
That is my professional opinion. Someone said, what do you think about all the defenders we have missing? It's like, uh-oh, that this is not good.
It's not good, and yet it's somehow strangely familiar.
Yeah.
It feels right, doesn't it? It feels like this would happen to us.
Is that how the brief comes in? They say, write a two-word article on your thoughts about
it. Yes, please expand on that. Yeah. Jim, can you explain perhaps what Lauren Koscielny was thinking when he steamed into that tackle against Everton at the weekend?
I think it was a little bit of a warm day, and
fancied a pint.
Maybe he didn't have his sunglasses on, and you know, I've absolutely no idea what was going on there, but literally everybody in the whole of the ground went, that's a red. Straight away. He's gone. Odd. What was he doing?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
And yeah, I mean, I know we're all partisan football fans and that's the rules of the game, but then watching, I think it was Enner Valencia, get roundly booed for the rest of the half as if he hadn't been split in two by Laurent Koscielny is, it did make me smile. But yeah, it was a red straight away. It's like, oh no.
Oh, yeah. It was really, that, oh no. I went, oh no, at that as well. Yeah. James, that was then obviously compounded by the injury to Gabriel.
Yeah, that was another oh no moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was one of those where you see the slow motion replay and go, I'm glad I'm not that knee.
Yeah.
That's...
Because normally your Gabriel oh no moments are different, aren't they?
But, yeah, that's true, yeah.
He was having a decent game as well.
He was having a decent game, but I feel with him that sometimes it's like he'll have a decent game and then the next game he'll do the Gabriel oh no thing.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
So maybe, no, I'm not.
Maybe it's a good thing.
No, not at all.
It was unusual to see Gabriel go sliding in and do damage only to himself.
Yeah.
That was a change from his usual defensive strategy.
Yeah, and our central defenders do like a sliding tackle. Shkodran Mustafi, he's
a guy. He plays on skates, doesn't he?
Yeah. It's like he's got a quota.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I want you three times to go sliding in for no good reason.
It could be a quota, or he could have a bet on against Gabriel. And they've been locked in competition for months.
With, Joey Barton, Bookmakers Inc. But he might be out because he's got a concussion, and he's been too ill to even train.
Yeah.
I saw some people during the week say he just needs to man up and get out there and, you know, get it all behind him. It doesn't quite work like that. Can you, Jim, risk a guy in an FA Cup final who's so dizzy he can't even go to training when you could just basically run around the pitch a bit? It's a big risk, isn't it?
You can't. If he gets a further injury, then, you know, you're... It's a nightmare, isn't it? You can't take that risk. And if he hasn't trained yet, you've got to say, it's not looking good.
No.
I mean, if he can't stay on his feet normally, God knows what it'll be like with a concussion.
Yeah, just sliding everywhere.
I dread to think.
Yeah. Tayo, what do you reckon?
It's a 29-degree day on Saturday. He hasn't played for weeks. He's holding Monreal and Per. Here it comes. Here it comes. And also, I mean, I'm really hoping for... The one thing I can take from it is that I'm hoping for the 2005 script where we play with seven or eight defenders, do absolutely nothing all game.
And then win a penalty shootout?
With Petacek saving all the penalties.
I mean...
That he hasn't saved this year. All in one goal.
I'd love to see that, Tayo, but I don't know if you've seen Petacek facing a penalty this season. It doesn't feel likely to me.
Yeah. Well, like, he could be saving them up. That's the whole...
Yeah.
That is the whole...
He's
thing.
Got a quota.
Like, there's a...
He's going to use it all in the final.
There is a scientific thing, James. I'm not sure if you're aware of this.
Science is not my strong point.
I know.
Yeah.
It's called the law of averages. And sooner or later, he's got to save one, right? Sooner or later.
You'd think. The final would be as good as time as any.
Yeah.
Who's Chelsea's penalty tag? Hazard. He's pretty handy.
He's good at them.
Yeah.
Maybe they might let John Terry take the penalty. Because it's his last game, having come on for a crippled Gary Cahill. He recreates that famous moment from the Champions League final where he slips on his arse and shanks the ball wide, then sits on the pitch and cries. Petacek doesn't even have to make a save. It's a win-win.
It would be a fitting farewell, certainly.
There is a debate, of course, when it comes to the FA Cup and our goalkeeping selection. It has been quite the issue down the years. You remember Wojciech Szczęsny was the first-choice goalkeeper throughout the 2014 season, and Arsene Wenger decided to add a little bit of comedy to events by playing Lukasz Fabianski.
Mm.
You know, fuck it, it's just Hull. What could go wrong?
Sure.
Seriously. And then, of course, having dropped Wojciech Szczęsny for being a crafty smoker in the showers after that terrible game at Southampton and played Ospina, who'd played quite well for the whole rest of the season. He went and played Chesney in the final.
Yeah.
So, are you in any way worried that Matt Macey is going to start the FA Cup final?
It is an alarming prospect, isn't it? Petr Cech played in the semi-final. That's the one thing. Because, you know, with Fabianski, he got us through, didn't he, in the penalty shootout.
Was a bit of a hero with Kim Sjöström.
Exactly, who didn't start the final. But, yeah, and then with Chesney, there was that thing of, you know, he had been the number one. With Ospina, I feel like the game's up, isn't it? He's off to Turkey. Everyone seems to know it. I think it's got to be Cech, hasn't it? Against Chelsea as well.
Yeah.
It's got to be Cech.
It's got to be Cech. Which is why it'll be Ospina. No, I don't think it can be anything other than Czech.
No, with our central defenders falling like flies, there is no way in the world he's going to put Ospina in there to control the box in his.
Czech's captain, isn't he? I imagine. Will he be?
I guess, yeah. Or Mertesacker.
Oh, Mertesacker.
We'll discuss
the Walking
three.
Dead.
Remember him?
He's back.
He is back. He is back.
What do you think about playing Mertesacker? I know you're a big Mertesacker man. Are you worried about him on that Wembley
turf? I would invite Mertesacker to play at my 50th birthday party with a ukulele.
Sure.
FA Cup final is nothing, man.
Yeah.
Look, it's a worry when a guy's been out for the entire season and has been seemingly okay for quite a few months and hasn't been played. I think that's maybe the one little doubt I have in the back of my mind.
What has he been doing in the meantime? What are his other jobs as captain? He's busy with those programme notes.
Doing the programme notes. But did you see that Amy Lawrence wrote in her piece when she went out to Rome to talk to Wojciech Chesney? Mertesacker had been in touch with Chesney to say, look, you know, come on back, be part of the final, come back to the club, that kind of thing. I mean, I guess he has had plenty of free time on his hands. Like, what will I do today? Chesney,
Yeah.
But I think, you know, he's obviously got that experience, and he is a player that all the rest of them really look up to and what have you. But, it's a risk, isn't it? I mean, what if Kieran Gibbs, who is struggling with a thigh injury, what if he's not fit?
I think you're going to say, what if he plays?
Well, that's a different thing, but do we have worries, Tayo, over the system? Like, if we don't have the ability to play Monreal as a centre-half because he's needed at left-back or left-wing-back, might you go to a back four?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was thinking that, but as I know nothing about football, I was hoping someone else would suggest it first. But no,
What are you doing?
I was going to tell you afterwards. No, I genuinely think that it's, based on absolutely no knowledge at all, that it's possible that we'll play a back four just because of... Just for some extra protection in the midfield, the fact that we don't actually have the players to play in the positions in the system that we've got. I mean, if Monreal is playing left back, we do not have a left back unless. Necessity being the mother of invention and so forth, we might just have to do that. And Coquelin comes into the team, and then hopefully we get my 2005 script that I'm working on of 0-0.
You're pretty committed to this.
Especially because. It would just be really funny. We had this in 2005 when this happened. Walking through the town centre afterwards, we were all celebrating as you do, and these Man United fans, how can you cheer that? We were like, like this. And that just made it, just the fact that we absolutely stole it is a script that has happened to us on many occasions, and everyone says, well, if you don't take your chances, blah, blah, blah. And it was just lovely to be on the other side of that and to go into this game so massively the underdogs will just make it funnier.
Conte said that we're the favourites.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's very funny.
Because they've already won something, and this is our chance to win something, and we might be a bit more up for it or a bit more focused.
But they won that thing because they were better than us.
Don't tell him that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's not the first time we've gone into an FA Cup final with a bit of a patched-up defence, is it?
Well, that's right. 2003, if you remember, we had a central defensive pairing of Oleg Luzhny. I loved Oleg. He was great. I saw so much of myself in Oleg, you know.
Really?
Slow, not very good.
Yeah.
It was like watching myself play for Arsenal. Living vicariously through Luzhny.
I think we all were at the time.
And Martin Keown, who I believe at the time was quite injured and had to have a number of painkilling injections to get through the game. And when you think about it, that was a real challenge because Southampton had Brett Ormerod.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Guys, if we can survive Brett Ormerod, anything's possible.
Costa and Hazard? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
The players were so scared of Brett Ormerod and what he could do that I remember, was it Pires and Thierry running it down to the corner flag at 1-0? You can almost see them saying to each other in French, oh, no, just keep it away from...
Keep it away from Ormerod.
Keep it away from Brett.
That guy could do us some real damage.
Yeah. What about you, Jim? Are you, do you think you're a back three or a back four man for the final?
Well, I'm a back three man, but you know what Wenger's like, don't you? Because I think it's something that served us well after... Pretty disastrous, let's be honest. January to April wasn't particularly good.
No.
If we're being, honest. And
I think that's suddenly, kind, Jim, to be honest.
I think it's being honest and kind. But I think, so suddenly something's happening and it's working. I say don't change it, but Wenger's Wenger. It could happen. Yeah. But no, I think it would be mad. I think it would be absolute madness to change. I think it's something that's just about working. It's made us better. And I know we haven't quite got the personnel that we would have liked, but I think it would be insane to, as well as not having the personnel, to then change it.
All right, so let's throw this out there. Let's say that Kieran Gibbs is not available for the game. All right? Who are we playing, assuming we go with a back three where Bellerin's on the right? We've got Holding, Mertesacker, Monreal as our centre halves. What are we doing with that left wing-back position?
Bellerin. Just put his boots on the other feet.
All right.
He'll be all right.
Turn him around?
Yeah, pretty much. And then Oxlade-Chamberlain, who hasn't played for 3 weeks. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I do wonder.
I think it's time to unleash Cohen Bramall, the signing from non-league in January, the ultimate fairy tale.
The guy who came from the 8th division.
Yeah, makes his debut on the Wembley turf. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I could.
Yeah, that's the scary thing. That's the scary thing. In seriousness, I genuinely don't know. I mean, I
think we have to stick with the back three, right? Back three? Anyone up for a regular old back four? Right.
A deafening silence.
So that's pretty conclusive.
Maybe we just go 4-4-2 while we're at it. Yeah. Just go back to the old days.
Well, speaking of the 8th division, do we not still have like Alberto Mendes somewhere or Amari Bischoff or any of...
No, none of those guys are... None of those guys are around. They didn't make it for some reason.
Manchester City released Gael Clichy today. There's still time, guys.
Bring him home.
Bring him home. No, he's cup tied. I've looked into it.
Yeah.
Can't be done. I made some phone calls. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, people did ask about Callum Chambers, but he's cup tied as well.
Yeah.
So we're wedded to the back three, I think. Yeah.
But who's your left wing back then? You've said this before. It's Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, isn't it?
Oxlade-Chamberlain, because he's played left of the 4-3-3 or the 4-2-1-3 or 4-2-1-2 or whatever.
Yeah.
He's played out there plenty of times before. I'm not sure defending is his strong point anyway.
Mm.
So I don't think it would make too much difference if he was on the left or the right, although his crossing from the right-hand side has been pretty good.
Bellerin has played left wing back before.
Has he?
Yeah, he played it on loan at Watford a couple of times.
Oh, that's just before they cut his loan spell really short and sent him back?
Yeah, because he was doing terribly, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, that augurs well.
Yeah, it bodes well, yeah.
It's an option, though.
It's always good to have options.
It is an option.
I don't know. Basically, I think we're praying for Kieran Gibbs to be fit, which tells you something about the state we're in.
Yes.
I quite like Kieran Gibbs. I'm sorry, Kieran Gibbs, by the way. He seems like a nice guy.
He does seem like
But I wish he was better at football.
That's the only thing. Yeah, I'd be with you on that. So, the other issue, I suppose, is that midfield picks itself with Xhaka and Ramsey.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room to squeeze in a cock or Elneny. come on. Alexis and Ozil, and then... Who plays up front, Tao?
There was a shout from the crowd for Sinogo.
There was a great...
Sorry, security, can we have someone removed? Thank you.
Sonogo's a great shout, but no, we've got his 2017 replacement in Chaos Theory, otherwise known as Danny Welbeck, because much as though I love Danny Welbeck, and I do think Danny Welbeck should start for mobility reasons, but Christ, I wish he could finish or remember how to finish. He clearly can. He just seems kind of shorn of some sort of confidence. And the miss the other day, which you guys discussed.
Do you mean the assist? The brilliant assist?
Yeah, the amazing, the
which
amazing,
you, which you guys discussed the other day, yeah.
Eyes in his back of his head assist.
Yeah, he knew exactly what he's doing. I mean, it has to be... On a big pitch like that, it has to be Danny Welbeck starting. It makes the side move better, even if he himself isn't contributing the way that we'd want him to.
Mm. Jim?
100%, because Giroud seems to be better off the bench. So Welbeck every day, he does miss a few. He also creates a few, and he's I think it has to be.
But what about the semi-final, Manchester City? Giroud started, did he not? And then Welbeck came off the bench against a tiring City defence, big pitch. Changed the game, didn't he?
Mm.
So there is something to be said for that, potentially.
Yeah.
Lucas Perez is revving his engine, you know.
I think he can stop revving it, to be honest. I think he can do what he wants on Saturday. I don't think he's going to be at Wembley, is he?
No, well, maybe. He might make the bench, given we've got nobody else, but yeah.
Yeah, true.
Will there be a chapter on that, along with the other 43 chapters in Wenger's book he keeps promising?
He will tell you one day what happened.
Right after the Park Ju-sung chapter.
Yeah. I mean, don't mention young... South Korea, because James is still in trouble with those guys.
Yeah, there's been a few issues over there, as people probably know. Well, let's gauge it from crowd reaction. Can we have shouts for Giroud starting? Okay, laughs don't count. So I'm going to go with nil, and then shouts for Danny Welbeck. Problem solved. Crowdsourcing for team selection. It's the future, guys.
Wow.
That was extraordinary. That was
like really unanimous.
I mean, honestly, you could hear a pin drop. But I think there's one guy out there who really wants Giroud to start, but he was just scared.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was right as well, wasn't he? He'd have been hounded out of this
honestly,
room.
Honestly, this whole event could have turned.
Chased out by the Welbeckians. Yeah. No, I think it has to be Welbeck. Simply because he can give those defenders a bit more of a runaround, stretch the play. I'm with Tayo that I wish he could finish with a bit more frequency and regularity. But maybe he, like Petr Cech with penalties, the law of averages, he's due a goal.
Saving it all up for Chelsea.
Yeah, so that's our team more or less sorted out.
Yeah.
What do you think, James, of our actual chances?
Ah, those. I don't feel... I don't want to be negative, because it's Cup Final weekend, guys.
Yeah.
We should enjoy it right up until kickoff. as much as we can. No, I feel concerned. I'll be honest, I felt pretty good about it until all the defenders started dying. That was a turning point for me in my optimism. That was where things started to dive bomb. But it is a one-off game. You know, anything could happen. Tayo's laughing at that.
What are you laughing at?
I want it to be true, James.
We all want it to be true.
No, I'm with you. When the defenders started dropping off like that, when you think the whole big pitch, hot day, Mertesacker and Hazard, I'm terrified. But you know, I'm never the most enthusiastic of our bunch. So, but I am scared about this one. And I did go into the semi-final full of doom and gloom and didn't even want to go. And then went.
Well, exactly. We all felt full of doom and gloom.
It ended up being a great day and a great game of football. And I would love that to be the case. And I'll be watching it from behind the sofa.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I do like your idea of recreating the 2005 final, because. That was very funny indeed, to be honest. We had absolutely no right to win that game.
I think the best bit was when nobody realised Reyes had been sent off. Remember that? Towards the end, he got sent off and it was like...
Yeah, it was kind of like an allegory for his entire Arsenal career, really. Just disappeared and no one really understood it.
It was a little bit.
But yeah, I don't feel... It's difficult to be confident, isn't it? They're the best team in the country. I don't like saying it, but they are.
Yeah. But we have beaten them this season.
We have.
And I'm not trying to say that this is something that should definitely happen, but it did coincide with an unfortunate event happening to you.
Ah.
You remember when, you know, you got stuck in traffic and you missed a goal and then you missed the second goal and...
Yeah.
By that.
So what you're saying is, James, can you not go to the game on Saturday?
Or could you just fall down?
Sure.
You know, like the steps at Wembley Way, getting off the train. Just...
There's a lot of steps at Wembley Park Station, actually.
There are.
I mean, what's worrying is I arrived here tonight and several people have come up to me saying they're concerned that I look so healthy. I have not been in a room with so many people who wanted to harm me since school. I feel genuinely at risk here.
Right.
Maybe at the end of the show, I'll crowd surf and we'll just see what happens.
Yeah, do the thing. Everybody come up to the front. James can do the thing where he jumps into the crowd and you just...
Yeah. Part like the Red Sea.
Splat. Yeah. Splat. But yeah, look, it's a final. Strange things happen in finals, as we know. As Arsenal fans, it has happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
You'll remember that Wigan beat Manchester City a few years back, quite unexpectedly. That was funny. I'm not saying we're Wigan, but...
Who's our Ben Watson?
That's a good question.
No, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think we've got anyone that good.
No.
And yeah, look, you just... I guess you have to hope, even if it is
That's
a bit
it.
Worrying.
7 wins from 8. Jim, are you going to bang the drum? Do you believe?
Well, on the basis that I was beside myself with fear before the Villa Cup final, I think it's pretty much my default position. No, I'm not particularly optimistic. But we are on a good run of form. Come on, we are. And it's Alexis's... Can we say that? Can we say it could be his last game? Could be lots of people's last games. So... No, I'm not optimistic.
Guys, however nervous you feel, think how much worse it would have been if Spurs had won that semi-final. I dread to think how... imagine this evening tonight. It would just be the most tense occasion you can possibly imagine. Just 100 people sat in a room weeping.
Going, no.
Worrying about what could happen at Wembley.
Yeah.
This is comparatively chilled out.
Yeah.
It's a win whatever now. As long as Spurs aren't happy, it's going to be all right.
Yeah, all we have to do is stop Chelsea doing the double. That's...
Yeah.
That's it.
It's in our hands. We're the favourites, Antonio Conte said.
Yeah, he did. And he would never lie.
No.
He would never lie. So, that's the FA Cup final. That is the FA Cup final. Where are we going with this now? Did we say? Should we give some crisps away?
Yeah, why not? Do you want to do the quiz?
We've got a couple of quiz questions here. So, we're going to have to do it. I'm going to ask the question and like the first hand I see go up because unfortunately we don't have the budget to give you all buzzers like with a proper quiz show. So what I'll do is I'll ask the question.
Yeah.
You keep an eagle eye on the crowd and you pick the first person who's got their hand up as far as you can see.
Okay, and then they'll have to shout really loud, yeah?
Arseblog writers and people who know fucking every obscure thing about Arsenal are not allowed, Tim. Yeah. Stillman. I know, yeah. All right, so the first question is about the 1979 FA Cup final when Arsenal beat Manchester United 2-0.
He knows the answer already.
Right? Look, he knows. I want to know who scored all the goals in the final.
All the goals.
All the goals.
Arsenal and
all
Manchester United.
All goal scorers. The 5 goal scorers.
Okay. There's a hand here, but his face is
reluctant.
Not as convinced as his arm. Talbot, Stapleton, McElroy, McQueen, Sunderland. That's correct.
Correct.
Give the man some ruffles.
One bag of ham on ruffles for you, sir. They are so delicious. So delicious. Okay. Here's another pack of delicious ham on ruffles. James, we can't give them all away.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah.
We've got to keep some for ourselves. It's about, yeah. This is about the 1993 FA Cup final. In the first game, the drawn game that finished 1-1, both goal scorers, please. I saw that guy there, actually, quick as a flash. No.
Ian Wright and John Harkes, he said he was incorrect.
No, incorrect.
Andrew's
I have a pink shirt there, sorry. No. The guy there with less hair than me. No, it wasn't.
That guy at the back. David Hurst and Ian Wright. Excuse me, I'll go deliver ruffles.
You want to ask one more question?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay, okay. 1993, the second game. The Andy Linnigan goal. Who took the corner from which Linnigan headed home the crucial goal? Andrew, did you see a hand?
I saw that guy, but he already got a go, so... I don't know who did it. You pick one. I'm very uneasy now.
I picked this man right at the back in the far corner.
Yes.
It was Paul Mercer.
It was Paul. You can share in our ruffles up here after the show. We'll share some of our ruffles with you. Hang on, I'll do that one. Okay.
Okay, do you want another question?
Yeah, one more.
One more question, okay. Because Andrew's scared we're going to give away all the crisps. Okay, 1998. Oh, I'm back in the game. I understand what's happening again. Mark Overmars. Who passed to Mark Overmars for his goal in the 1998 FA Cup final?
Guy with the glasses.
Emmanuel Petit, correct.
All right. I need some crisps for the guy. All right.
Precious cargo indeed.
We will have some more crisps to give away in part two, so don't worry about it. And we will have some crisps to share on stage afterwards, because we're good people.
We are good people.
And we love you.
Guys, as ever in part two, we are going to be needing some questions from you guys. So put your thinking caps on.
Yeah, some good questions. No pressure or anything like that. No pressure at all. So one of the things that James and I wanted to do this evening was, I'm sure many of you have seen the thing that Jimmy Kimmel does, the mean tweets kind of stuff. And if you write about Arsenal, if you produce content about Arsenal, you will understand that there are a range of opinions out there at this moment in time, and not all of them are terribly complimentary.
No.
Not all of them.
I mean, the internet's a scary place, guys.
It is a bit weird. So we wanted to just maybe read out a few of the comments that we get or things like that. So let me see if I can get this one here. A while ago, I did a Photoshop of... this is no good for the people at home, and maybe you can't see it here. But Hector Bellerin posted a picture of his girlfriend and his dog. So I photoshopped Hector Bellerin's head onto his dog's head and his head onto the dog's head onto Hector Bellerin's head.
It's the only obvious thing to do.
Absolutely.
In that circumstance.
So this guy on Facebook, who's called Bearam, said, "Is he for real? God has created you human. Appreciate it, dickhead." Which I liked.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, I obviously, it's not intended negatively, but I have people wishing ill health on me constantly online. I also do some stuff on YouTube, and of all the comments, YouTube comments are sometimes the most abrasive, let's say. A guy called Rectard said to me 2 weeks ago, "You look like a skinny Phil Mitchell." Which I thought was, on a similar theme, I put up a video reacting to the Watford game earlier this season, just giving my analysis, my thoughts about the game, some tactical insights, you know, whatever I can do. Stephen Dowling, 95, replied, "How long until you're fully bald, mate?" That was in September.
It's like there's a countdown.
Yeah, and then in April, I posted a picture of me on a holiday in Spain. Stephen Dowling came back just saying... He recurred. He bounced up again. Just all he said this time: "You're bald, mate."
James and I also write for ESPN, ESPN FC, and they have this. The commentators have this strange thing where they refer to you by your surname all the time. So it's always McNicholas or Mangan. This comment doesn't have that. I just wanted to mention that. I wrote a piece about moving to three at the back, and a guy called David Farmer came along and said, "Well, it won't be bad. It'll give our more game time to our defenders and make rotation easier. The same thing with our midfield. Arsenal is an attacking, passing team. I think the three at the back will suit them."
Oh, and Arsblog is quite a mediocre fan site.
Slam!
Boom!
You've been roasted.
Thank you for that, David.
5 months ago, I put a little video on YouTube. James Baker kept it straight, just came in with, "You look like a massive nerd, James." But Mickey Madras, he was clever. He played a bit of one-upmanship and said, "You look more like a massive turd." So there are some great minds out there on the YouTube comment section. Good to know.
This is a good one. This was a comment on a post about Petr Cech talking about the players not being able to perform during this difficult period of the season we had. So Eric Chisholm came along, and I should point out that when you come to Arsblog News to leave a comment, the first time your comment has to be approved, moderated, and then afterwards your comments are allowed, you know, without me having to do anything. But Eric came along, and he talked about, he replied to somebody, he said that somebody sounded a bit delusional. He said, it's the same issue with Wenger. He's been very self-assured, intelligent, and well-spoken. He's pretty much the managerial equivalent to Jeffrey Dahmer, just without the murders and such. And after about 7 minutes, when the comment hadn't been approved, he came back to leave another one and replied to himself to say, "I meant to say Ted Bundy, not Jeffrey Dahmer."
It's good to clear that up.
Yeah. Which serial killer is Arsene Wenger? Yeah.
This one, I did a video, somewhat embarrassing, where I dressed up as Arsene Wenger and sang, I mean, it's a good start, isn't it? And I sang a song dissing Robin van Persie. And Ovi Wovi Woo wrote about me dressed as Arsene Wenger, "This guy is a frickin' old man. If he said it to Van Persie face to face, Van Persie will knock the shit out of that old prick." And I shouldn't have responded, but I did. And I said, "Oh, I was wearing a wig and makeup. I was dressed up to look old." And undeterred, he came back with, "Go suck Arsene Wenger's dick, you ugly ass motherfucker." So that teaches you not to engage with trolls, basically.
It does.
There you go.
And if anyone was wondering why it is we haven't won the Premier League or the Champions League, I found out this week it's my fault. Entirely my fault. Dan, at Dan5570 on Twitter, said, "Your pathetic fear is what holds Arsenal back from joining the 21st century." Sad.
I have long thought that. I knew the fans chanted against Wenger, then they chanted against Kroenke, and next, it will be you.
It will be me. And the final one I have here is sometimes, if I have a few beers on a Saturday night, I'll go home and play music over the internet on this thing called Mixlr. It's quite good, it's quite fun, but I tend not to remember it by the end. And I got an email from Nick Christie, who said, "Hey, Arsblog, I really enjoyed the Mixlr session, as tipsy blogs making drunken promises are the best blogs." So I replied, "Uh-oh." "What promises did I make?" And he replied, "Ha-ha, you promised to come and drink bourbon with me and my husband." Sounds all right. But then he said, "It's especially hilarious, as I have a girlfriend and a dog, but not a husband." So there you go.
There you go. And there's just one man who always comes on my YouTube channel, and every time I put up a video, just writes Tintin. But, you know, it just keeps happening, guys. It's quite a sophisticated form of bullying. Anyway, should we call that part one?
Yeah, we'll call that part one. We're going to take a little break. You guys get yourself a drink. We'll come back in 15, 20 minutes. We'll do part two with your questions right after this.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Good evening, everyone. Hello again.
Hello.
Are we recording?
Yeah. We are recording now, which is why people should, you know, stop talking. Like the traditional Arscast Extra, this is the part of the show where we're going to answer questions that you guys have. So I hope you've thought of some really excellent, interesting questions that will help us entertain you. This is the kind of the lazy part of the show, I think.
Yeah, exactly. You guys do the work now.
Yeah. But before we do, James has discovered a very interesting fact about the 2002 FA Cup final.
Yeah, we were doing some research for asking a couple of questions maybe later in the show. And I had forgotten this, but John Terry didn't actually start the 2002 FA Cup final. And going on Wikipedia, it says the reason he didn't start: on the day of the final, Terry woke up with a virus which affected his balance. A virus he has seemingly suffered with for years since. He can't shake it, the poor guy. But yeah, amazing, didn't know that. He came on at half time.
Yeah,
I wonder, to make a telling contribution.
Like, part of me thinks that could be Wikipedia mischief. You know.
I don't know, guys. There's a source. I mean, I'm not going to check what it is. I'm just going to assume it's true. That's how everyone else works, isn't it?
Yeah.
The source is the Edinburgh Evening News. If they be trusted, who can?
Truly the most august of journals.
Well, there you go.
It really is. So we're going to do questions. Normally, James is the one that is banished to the crowd.
Mm.
But I've got a radio mic, so I'm going to wander about. So let's do it. Let's have questions if you've got one. Let's start here. Let's do it.
My question is for you, Andrew.
Oh, no. Right. Okay, go on.
That's all right. It's okay. When Wenger leaves, which is sometime
then in the future.
The distant future.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm still alive, hopefully. Who would you rather take over? Jose Mourinho or Phil Collins?
Will you cover his ears just for a second? You've absolutely fucked me here. Thank you very much. Jose Mourinho or Phil Collins?
I mean, the problem is, you imagine the team would probably fare better under Mourinho.
Than under Phil Collins?
Yeah.
And now I've got visions of being under Phil Collins. This is terrible. This is a terrible start to this part of the show. Oh God, this is so difficult.
We might win the cup final against all odds.
Yes.
You never know as well. Maybe Phil Collins has got the invisible touch.
Any more?
That's what we brought him for.
That's it. You've done your work here now. Yeah. We got the punt. Who would I... I can't even countenance.
I mean, guys, listeners at home won't be able to see this, but Andrew is crying now.
I am. I'm literally I'm crying on the inside and from places where I shouldn't be crying. Phil, you see, I really, really hate Jose Mourinho. And there's all that stuff about him being, well, he knows how to win. And that's true. Yeah, charity shit. But, you know...
What did you make of his treble last night, Andrew?
It was fantastic.
Did you enjoy that?
The
three-fingered salute.
The three... Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. League Cup, Europa League. Not that I'm being sniffy about the Europa League, because it's obviously...
It's a great competition, guys. It's a brilliant competition. And a real honour to be part of it.
One that we have aspired to for many years. We've flirted with it and everything. But, you know, Community Shield... I suppose I would rather Phil Collins took over because he wouldn't last long. That's the best answer I can come up with.
Yeah, fair enough.
Is that all right?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I mean, it will have hurt you to say it, but you did have to give one or the other.
Jim, if you had to choose a 1980s pop star to take over as manager of Arsenal, who would it be?
Well, there would obviously be Andy McCluskey from MMD, because they're the best band ever.
Okay. All right. Tayo?
Prince.
There's a problem.
Yeah, there is a problem there.
Guys, if we could sign Kim Chelstrom with a broken back, then Prince could be our manager.
All right, I'm going to get another question. Who's got... right, okay, let's do it.
So, gents, I'm afraid this is actually a bit more of a serious question than the I wish I could give you a funny one, but...
That's all right.
So, obviously, there's been a lot of chat about problems with people not being happy with the club, with the way the club's being run up at boardroom level. And for me, personally, in my opinion, I've noticed a bit of a slide ever since David Dean left the club. And I'm not really sure he was ever replaced by someone who really kind of epitomised the values and what was required to keep it going with the same kind of momentum it had been going before then. So I guess my question is, even though it's highly unlikely he's going to be brought back while Kroenke's there because he's basically an Usmanov, flunky these days, is there a way he could ever be brought back? And is there do you agree that it's been an unsettling situation with him gone, because even you kind of get it as well when you've heard him being interviewed. I've never had the pleasure of meeting the man, but his energy, just the way he is, just his character, he just oozed and epitomised everything about the club, and you could kind of understand why he was able to sign so many players, because when you met him, you thought, you know, I want to go with this guy. He's awesome.
Yeah,
so that's my question.
I think whatever you think of David Dean as a person, I think it's very difficult to argue that we haven't missed him on the football side. He was a huge ally of Arsene Wenger's, someone he worked really closely with. But I think when people talk about bringing him back, I mean, I don't mean to be ageist at all, but David Dean is 73 now, we were saying earlier. And it's not an appointment necessarily for the future or the long term, it's fair to say, right?
Yeah. Somebody who had that influence or that ability to bring out the best of Arsene Wenger, I think, is somebody that's been missed, right? To have that person that you really trust, because it was interesting when Wenger was asked about... Stop talking down the front, please. Thank you. Wenger was asked, you know, about director of football and all that kind of stuff, and he was very cautious about it because he feels like it would impinge on his authority as a manager. But Dean was basically doing much of that work when they were together. Now, he was kind of the architect of his own downfall, really, wasn't he? I'll take this mic. Is this one on? Okay, we got this one. No, it's good. He sort of orchestrated all the stuff that's gone on, and he has been a miss, but I think in terms of moving forward as a football club, it's about finding someone who can do what he did, but who can be there for more years.
Yeah, I mean, Ed Woodward's not a good example because he's had a fair few fuck-ups in the transfer market, particularly in his first window. But it is... I saw Jose Mourinho sort of said after the Europa League final, he was like, well, I've got my list of targets, I've given it to Ed Woodward, and that's that.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish that at Arsenal there was a similar structure in place whereby, you know, I'm not saying that the manager shouldn't have the authority to choose who he wants, but I think sometimes there's been a bit of an issue with Arsenal being so close to the negotiations. Mm.
Tyle?
I mean, David Dean's a little bit like Theo Walcott when he's out of the team. He's become... You know, he's turned into this kind of mythical unicorn figure since he left the club. And I do agree with you that he brought out the best in Arsene Wenger. They obviously had a relationship that worked. But like the guys have said, that time has possibly moved on. And also, let us not forget that, you know, one of the reasons why the club and the ownership situation is the way it is because of a situation which David Dean kind of brought on. And much as so, and I mean, we watched the Rocky and Wrighty documentary recently, and that bit at the end when he goes, you know, we're not supposed to have our favourites as a director, and then he gets his dramatic pause in, because he's always good at that. I mean, you know, he plays very well to us guys, which is why we're having a conversation now. And then he said, Rocky was my favourite. And like, you know, we all got a bit throat lumpy there. So there's so much to like about David Dean, but you know, you get the feeling, I mean, I've never met him either, but if I did, I'd feel like I'd been finessed by him by the time he walked away. Do you know what I mean? I think...
Charmed.
Absolutely. He's smooth like that. Mm. So, yeah, that's the strength and the weakness that I have with David Dean.
Jim?
I think nostalgia is a very powerful emotion, but I don't think it's healthy to keep looking back. Mm. Ultimately, much as we like to go on about 49 undefeated, I think in this instance, you need to look forward and find someone a bit like him. But the trouble is, he was part owner, part Arsenal fan, and I don't know whether that kind of thing even exists now.
No.
So I don't think he's the right man to come back, but I do think Wenger, let's assume he stays. I mean, it's a big assumption, but let's assume he stays. He needs a sounding board, someone who can tell him it's not the right decision, someone who can tell him that it is. I mean, I don't feel like he has that. So. Somebody like him, I agree. Not him, though.
The problem is that Arsene is so picky, I guess. You know, David Dean is someone he had a relationship with before he arrived at Arsenal. He's the reason Arsene came. Mm. And just bringing somebody in, you know, a Gazidis appointment or whoever it might be, who Arsene's prepared to work with on the same level, very difficult to find somebody like that. That's the issue.
Yeah. But it's got to be somebody who is going to be there beyond Arsene Wenger. That's the thing. So it's not about who works best with Arsene Wenger, but who's going to work best for the club over the next 15, 20 years. All right, I'm going to go this side for a question. Man here with glasses. Hello, man with glasses.
Hello, Andrew. First question is, when's Natalie Imbruglia coming on?
She was last week.
Oh, okay. But more seriously, a couple of months ago, you had Perry Groves on to one of your Askcasts, and he titillated us with news that perhaps Patrick Vieira was coming back in some sort of management capacity. Has that all gone away now? Was that all rubbish? And linked to that, if you could only have one of the two, either a management change or a backroom, boardroom structure change, which one do you think would have the best effect on Arsenal?
There we go, Andrew. First question, is Perry Groves a liar?
Look, I think that was one of the things that was going around, that there was contact with some of the legends. And you do wonder if it was one of those things that was put out there to make people think, oh, okay, let's take our minds off other bad things that are going on. But I don't know if the information was false or what exactly that situation was, but there has been, look, the names that were put about, this is what was going on in the background. Vieira and Bergkamp were the two names that were put out there, sort of on the rumor mill behind the scenes. People were talking about these guys coming back in. I haven't heard anything more about that since. But I think that could be in some ways tied to the inertia that we have with the manager's position.
I think that's true. I think it probably speaks to the inertia with everything with the club at the moment. It feels like a couple of months ago, it felt like we were closer to clarity on what was going to happen than we are now. We've actually sort of regressed in that respect. It'd be a great thing. I would love, personally, I know that, you know, he's been to Man City, he's been to New York, and his relationship with Arsenal hasn't always been what it might have been, but I would really love to see Patrick Vieira back at the club.
Right. Jim, what do you think?
I would love to see him back in some capacity, not yet as manager. I don't think he's ready for that kind of role yet, but I would like to see those kind of players back, because we don't, you know, a lot of those guys did drift off, and he's obviously a massive legend. Bergkamp, He'd be a great guy to have back, obviously, now that we're in the Europa League, Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, a bit far away on the plane. but you know, the Skype.
The Skype, yeah. Yeah, iPads. You could have an iPad for a halftime team talk.
It's really not a problem these days. Exactly. So let's get them both back.
Tayo?
Well, the thing about Vieira and Bergkamp is that they've gone off, done their things as coaches, and are still working on it. So I agree with you. I'll be happy with them. It's a pelter that gets, you know, used against Arsene Wenger a lot of the time. But I can see the problem with not seeing those players back because they've done something at the club, and we all talk about the Bayern Munich model. But then when you get the madness of Sol or the madness of TA wanting to come back, much as though we all adore Sol Campbell and Tony Adams, but I don't want them coaching anywhere near the first team, thanks very much, because they're just not. So, you know, a lot of the conversations, depending on what argument, it's all confirmation bias. If you're so against Arsene Wenger, then he doesn't want the experience of Sol Campbell in the dressing room. I don't want the experience of Sol Campbell in the dressing room, because...
Oh, little bit of politics again.
There is that too. But, you know, it's like, you do want to see... You'd love to see the players that you've identified with who've done their time doing it.
Who can genuinely contribute. That's the thing, I guess. But the other question... That's my beer, mate. It's all right. Well, that's okay.
The second question, Andrew. I mean, that was a massive question.
It depends on both counts who's going to take over.
Right.
Who is going to take over and what are their plans or what can they do? I think we're at the point where a managerial change is more realistic than boardroom or ownership change. You know, just by the fact Arsene Wenger is 67 and Stan Kroenke does not want to sell the club and has been quite strident about that in recent days. So it looks like managerial change is the one that will have to happen, but with that managerial change has to come structural change in terms of the way the football club is set up from a technical point of view, the mythical director of football, the recruitment, the scouting, the coaches. Coaches will change if a new manager comes in. That's the other thing. Mm. Managers bring their own coaches and tea ladies and all that. So.
But if you could choose, though, new manager or new owner, neither of them is Phil Collins. Which would you rather? What do you think would be healthier for Arsenal?
Oh. If I could choose, because it would be something that would be longer term, would be a new owner who actually had real interest in making the club successful and achieving its potential. And if that owner had that vision or had that ambition for the club, then if Arsene Wenger underperformed, would then be able to make the necessary change at that level too. So I think that would kind of not quite kill two birds with the one stone, but I think that's what I'd choose.
Fair enough.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Good answer.
I'm going to go down the back of the room a bit.
He's roaming.
Okay. I got one here. I'll come back down.
It's actually a bit of a John Terry point, but it's an Arsenal ownership point. After the last game was it Sunday? Mm-hmm. He made actually quite a Churchillian speech, but actually the telling point was when he went back to the centre circle and he talked to Abramovich and he said something like, you know, I know you put lots of money into this club, but you care about this club. You care from the under-8s all the way through. And I thought that's the problem. You know, we don't have an owner, we have an investor, and we need an owner. And I actually think that whichever manner, I think that the current regime with Kroenke and a board with Chips Keswick there, and I know firsthand about board issues and the fact that they live in a world 50 years ago. We need a new owner because I don't think we'll get a manager worth his salt who will come into the club and want to work under the current ownership structure. And therefore, I think we need a new owner rather than a new manager. Wenger will go within 2 years, but this is the beginning of the end. We must make sure that Arsene Wenger leaves with the dignity and let's, you know, I know it's a cliche, but everybody has Everybody says he has made an amazing contribution to the club and football. It's totally true. We mustn't let that get destroyed. But we do need a new owner more than a new manager. I'm not sure it will happen unless Usmanov makes a knockout bid. If he Usmanov may then take his money to Everton or somewhere else if he gets fed up. We're really in a difficult situation. I'm very miserable about the future because we're in the worst. We are in a rock and a hard place with Stan Kroenke, unfortunately, and that was David Dean's fault.
You're so miserable you forgot to ask a question.
No, but very well said, nonetheless.
Yeah. Okay. No, you don't get ruffled. You can share our ruffles for that. Okay, I'm going to come around here for this lady, and we'll get another question. Hello, 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 hello. Hello,
hello. Hello. So my question is completely different to that topic, which is good. I completely appreciate we're not a one-man team, but had Santi Cazorla not got injured, where would we have finished in the Premier League table?
Wow. Sorry. Very good question. Very good question. I mean, certainly... yeah, there's a few calls for fourth, which doesn't surprise me. A few shouts of second. Well, what's the competition, really, I guess? I think Chelsea still would have won the league by at a canter. I mean, they've put together a hell of a run this year.
See, I you remember when we were going to play Watford?
Yeah.
The end of January. And Chelsea, we were second in the table. Mm. And Chelsea were 8 points ahead of us. And the next game after Watford was Chelsea. If we'd beaten Watford, not been knocked sideways on our arses, if we'd managed to beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, you're looking at a swing, a change in momentum. So I'm not sure it would have been quite as clean cut, but I do feel like it's taken him until moving to the back three to figure out a way to play without Santi Cazorla.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. It's completely changed the trajectory of the team, hasn't it? Because with Cazorla there, we probably would never have had the need to go to a back three because we would have had a more functional midfield. So it's sort of difficult to imagine what shape we'd be in. I definitely think we'd be in the top four. I think we'd definitely be above that Liverpool side.
Yeah.
And even Man City, I think, you know, we would have given them a run for their money. There were still defensive issues with the centre-backs and with them being exposed, but Cazorla has such a massive, massive influence. I know he's signed a one-year deal, but I do think that now Arsenal have to sort of, you know, do the Diaby thing where you kind of imagine he's not going to be available and build a team without
to
him.
To the future. Tyle?
Well, I think we definitely would have pushed for the coveted made a race of it trophy that Tottenham managed to secure this season. So I think we would have definitely been up there with that. But, I agree with, again, what everyone said about Santi Cazorla. But also, I mean, if we're going to lay some criticism, we shouldn't really be in a position where our hopes of a title challenge or anything are resting on a 32-year-old with Achilles problems. Mm. You know, Jack Wilshere went out on loan at the start of the season. There's not really been any contingency for Cazorla getting injured, and that just seems like an oversight.
Jim?
I'm not convinced, if I'm honest, that it would have been massively different. Because if I don't know if any of you have got Time Hop on your phones, right? But Time Hop remembers what you did a year ago on social media, and then 2 years ago, and then 3 years ago, and then 4 years, and on back it goes. And it's hilarious every time it reminds me in the morning and look at it, and it's got all the same kind of anguished tweets from 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. Exactly the same points. And my worry is that, yes, he's a great player, Cazorla, but I think the fault lines that have run through this team for a very long time ignore the last 7 games, but they really have. I don't think they would have gone away just if he'd been fit. And that's what worries me more, is that the kind of mentality where we don't take up a level when we have the chance, and little things like that, and we always seem a little bit too far away, and I'm not sure he would have made the difference.
All right, I'm going to go down, just down the back a bit and try and spread it out. Sorry, folks. Guy with a hat, you're easy to see. Hello, guy with a hat.
So originally I'm from America, been Arsenal fan since 2000, Premier League has a very wide global appeal. I became an Arsenal fan because at the time they were the only team that could stop Man U dominance. So if you had to recruit more Arsenal fans who are foreigners, what reasons would you give to somebody if they say, hey, James, which football team should I support? Give me reasons why I should be an Arsenal fan. What would be your case?
Start with an easy one, okay.
Because I want to inflict pain on you for the rest of your life.
Are you a masochist? What's good about Arsenal? What's good about supporting Arsenal? Well, I mean, I imagine...
Look at all these people here tonight. This is what's good.
That's what's good. There's a hell of a community around them. And I think that the problem is that a lot of the... I think that question would have been easier to answer even 2 years ago, because I think a lot of the things that Arsene Wenger instilled at Arsenal and the sense of identity he built around the club were stronger then. And they were things like playing really attractive football, making sure that there was an opportunity for young players to break through. Just a certain style with which Arsenal carried themselves. And to be honest, it went beyond Arsene Wenger at one stage. It went right into the boardroom. And, you know, we talked about David Dean and him being very charming. And that was sort of something that carried right through the club, the marble halls and everything like that. But I think of late, some of those qualities have been less evident. For example, we aren't that fun to watch anymore. And the fact that we've even gone to a back three is kind of a compromise that Wenger has made that we're all happy to see because it's bringing results. But it's kind of an anti-Wenger move, fundamentally. And I think it still sits uneasy with him because he wants to play attacking football and he views that as a defensive change. So what I hope, obviously, is that if Arsene Wenger does stay, that he's able to get back to putting out something that looks like an Arsenal team. Because I think Arsenal teams over the last 20 years maybe have been the best to watch in the Premier League. Over the course of Arsene's reign, I don't think any other team has been as consistently attractive. But we're not there now. So it's a harder sell now, maybe.
Jim, got any... How would you convince somebody they should support Arsenal?
Well, I think there's always been a certain way that Arsenal do things. Everyone always says there's the Bank of England club, the kind of class that we do things with. I still think that holds true. I'm sure it happens in other clubs. But there's something very historic about Arsenal. There's something that that we tended to do things the right way. It has obviously changed a bit with the change of owners over the years. But and also, we've been successful for a long time. I mean, you have to tend to wait about 15 years for a title. But they tend to come again. So don't worry. It will happen again. We will win the league again. We might even get to a Champions League final again. So it's not like a one-trick pony, or not one-trick pony, like a one-off like Leicester. Yeah. Arsenal will always be there or thereabouts. We're not, we're kind of thereabouts at the moment. But we'll get there.
Okay. Tyler?
Well, James has said a lot of the things I was going to say about, we used to have Project Youth. We could at least be quite happily smug about the way that we did things. And the main thing was 2 years ago that we used to play the best football. James has said all of that. So all I've got left for you is that we're always on telly. So
we are always on telly.
So if you want to support Arsenal, then that's a good bet.
But also, no other club is called the Arsenal.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
That is good.
Cannons are pretty cool, guys. And red's a great colour.
Yeah.
And North London, yeah.
Exactly.
Beautiful part of the world.
And all of you guys.
Tube station.
All right, we're gonna take a little break from questions to give away some more ham on ruffles, because I know that's why you're really here. So a few more FA Cup final questions. James, you keep an eye on the crowd here, and I'll do the thing. All right, we're going back
fingers
to...
Fingers on the buzzers, guys.
Going back to 1998 at Wembley, when Alan Shearer was made... miserable, and it seems to have stuck with him a bit, doesn't it?
It has, yeah.
It's like
John Terry's dizziness. Enduring.
So, Nicolas Anelka scored the goal that sealed the game for us. Who played the pass to him?
Oh,
that guy that...
Yeah.
Yeah, you saw it. Yeah,
it's you.
Yes.
Ray Parlour, good shout. Well remembered.
Ray Parlour.
Pass me that book.
Your dreams have come true. With free crisps.
Lovely.
Okay.
Okay, next question.
All right.
We're taking you back to 2001. Straightforward, this one. Who was in goal for Liverpool?
Yes.
Correct, Stefan Onsho. Yeah.
That was the answer we were looking
Hallmarks.
For. Not Vesterveld. Were you going to say Vesterveld? Yeah, it was the wrong answer for
the
this
wrong answer. It's not Sander Vestado, it's Stefan Onsho.
Stefan Onsho. Hang on, I have to deliver the man his prize, Jim.
Of course, distribute
Please.
The ruffles. Do the honours.
Please enjoy those.
I hope you've got your Fitbit on, Andrew. All these steps.
That's why.
Yeah. okay, 2005. What I'm looking for, of course, it went to a penalty shootout. I'm looking for the five Arsenal takers. some early shouts there from
the guy at the back.
Right at the very back. That is absolutely correct.
Boom.
Lauren, Ashley Cole, Van Persie, Ljungberg, Vieira. What a roll call. Great pens in there as well.
Your life is crisps now. Your life is crisps.
Tayo's asked me who missed for them. I believe it was Paul Scholes who missed. Was it for United?
Paul Scholes missed the final penalty, yeah.
You could do the final question, Andrew.
Didn't we have something? Oh, we'll do the final question, then you can read your Ham on Ruffles review.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah, let's remember that. Okay. 2002. You remember that final, James? You know the one when, what's his name? John Terry. Remember where he ended up flat in his face?
I do remember.
Remember that one?
Yeah, he wasn't well.
That was a good one. Tell me, what was unusual about that final?
We won, someone said. Now.
You've already won, so you can't do it. So somebody tell me what was weird about that final. This man down here. No.
The roof was not on the stadium.
This man here. No.
Wasn't the first one at Cardiff.
This man. Correct.
Correct. Arsenal had two remaining Premier League fixtures at the time of the FA Cup final.
Yeah. The next game after that 2002 final was Old Trafford. A certain Sylvain Wiltord scored a certain goal, which won Arsenal the double. And then in the final game of the season, Arsenal won 4-3 against Everton, a game that in itself was remarkable because Francis Jeffers scored a goal.
There we go.
Incredible. Incredible. Oh, hang on. You need some crisps. I was almost cheating you out of your prize there. So here we go. Enjoy.
I had no recollection of that whatsoever, that we had league games still to play.
Yeah, yeah. It was unusual. I don't remember why, but...
World Cup, yeah.
World Cup, okay. No crisps for you, mate.
So, yeah, listen. In preparation for this, believe it or not, we do sometimes do some. I looked up a review of Ham on Ruffles from the esteemed munchiesblog.com.
Oh, well, look at Munchies.
That is real.
Yeah.
They're giving you a run for the money in the blogging world, Andrew. And this is a full quotation from his review. I'll be honest, he seems a little confused by the concept. The chips themselves were standard Ruffles, semi-thick and crunchy, with the ridges the brand is known for. The chips themselves had no differentiation, aside from the smell, in fact. No overly red tones, just a standard-looking Ruffle that smelled like it was handed over by someone behind a deli counter. It's very descriptive, isn't it?
It's good, I like it.
He goes on, with the first bite of Ham and Ruffles, you feel like you are somehow eating a potato chip with a slice of ham. But it is all crunch and no deli meat. So he seems to have slightly misunderstood the whole thing. He thinks it's like eating ham and crisps. Yes, of course, I would venture.
When are they going to do these flavoured crisps?
Yeah. Then he says, at times the smell is almost pepperoni-like, but the flavour is definitely ham. In fact, I can't really think of any way to describe them other than that, and nor could any of the people I had try them. They're called ham ruffles.
Imagine him going around to people, could you please sample these ham crisps and tell me what you think they taste of?
Yeah. He seems furious that everyone says ham.
Oh my, how could they?
Yeah, baffled by them.
Baffled by them.
Baffled by them. I'm not a fan of Munchies Blog.
Well, there we go.
That's all that was, really.
I hope the people who've won their ham on ruffles enjoy the taste of ham with their ruffles. Okay, let's have a few more questions before we knock it up. You won crisps, so you can't get it. Guy down the back. Is it really good? Are you sure? Okay, you're setting yourself up for a fall if it's not, though. Okay. All right, let's do it. And I'll come down to you afterwards.
The pressure's on. Here we go.
Is the reason that you're on the radio, Mike, that James is scared that we'll beat the shit out of him?
I was going to say, I'm surprised you let me get away with not doing the radio, Mike, because my chances of slipping and hurting myself are significantly increased if I was to be not on the stage. In answer to your question, yes, I am scared, yes. Very scared.
But my real question is, how many of the Chelsea squad would you put in your first 11 Arsenal team? Because I only put three or four in, which I guess means that they're coached, prepared better than we are.
Very good question.
That is a disgusting question.
No. The Chelsea squad in the starting 11 at Arsenal, in a back three system, we might as well. Hazard, you'd have in somewhere.
I'd have Hazard, yeah. I guess.
But for who? You know, you've got to drop one of Ozil or Alexis, haven't you? No, you play Alexis up top, and yeah. Hazard and Ozil behind him. Smart move. Kante wins the league every year, doesn't he? You've got to have him.
That's it. He's just lucky, that guy.
You'd probably have him in for Aaron Ramsey, maybe? Is that unpopular? Next to Xhaka? I don't know. Well, that's what I'm saying.
And see, then, I'm sorry to sort of cut across this, but I find the idea of these combined teams things dreadful.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, I just can't.
Fabregas.
I love me some Cesc.
You do love Cesc.
I do love Cesc.
I mean, there's a few. I mean, I see the point, the broader point. I think, I mean, I've said this all season. I think Arsenal have got a really good squad and a really good first 11, if there were defenders in it. But, like, yeah.
Conte,
yeah. Conte's the one you would take, I guess. Antonio Conte, not N'Golo Conte. So, difficult to decipher, which I meant there.
It is.
It's Giroud and Johan Giroud all over again. I could never do that. Yeah, Antonio Conte would be the guy. I think with Antonio Conte, this Arsenal squad's got every chance.
Tayo, any Chelsea players you'd have in?
Well, given how the conversation started at the start of the evening, I'll take Azpilicueta because he can play left back. So, yeah, apart from that, Hazard's quite good, isn't he?
Mm.
Is their keeper better than our keeper? I mean, they thought so.
Yeah.
Changing him? Nah.
Jim?
I'm with you. I'm not really into any of that.
I'm going to deftly shimmy past this question by saying, look how bad Chelsea were last year. Something like 40 points different.
Mm.
Because of the manager and the way that they've been coached and the, I don't know what else was going on there, lots. And look how they've been this year. And I think the way that they're coached and trained makes a big difference. And I'd love to see this squad similarly motivated.
I see what you, yeah. But there is the other thing, the other part of that, where they played deliberately on purpose to get Jose Mourinho fired. So there's something quite admirable about that, I think, you know. I've got to run down here because there was a guy.
You've got a long way to go.
I do. Hi.
A nostalgic question. In the Arsene Wenger era, other than Gilberto Silva, who is the most underrated player that you'd want in your team?
There's a good one.
Yeah, most underrated player. There's shouts for Gil Grimondi. I'm not sure.
Edu? I think Edu was really quite underrated.
Edu was unfortunate because he was never first choice properly, was he?
Not really, but I think he was a really good player. Really good. He got injured a bit. He was a bit injury prone, but I liked Edu. Stepanovs. Please.
Oh, I'll tell you who I actually think is a bit underrated. Ashley Cole, no. He's very good. Gilberto, we were exempt from saying. I think, although he did run around in circles an awful lot, Sylvain Wiltord, I think, was quite underrated. Contributed a lot of goals for Arsenal. And played in three positions. Never really a first-choice player, but scored a lot of big goals too. Scored at Old Trafford. He'd be on my list.
Mm. Jim?
Why is it that the underrated players are always central midfielders? I look back at, you think Paul Davis and Steve Williams, players like that, they were always underrated. Gilberto underrated. So I don't know, maybe it's because they do all the hard work without all the glory.
Yeah, I think could be it, because if a striker, you can measure them by the goals they score. Defenders, you measure them by the goals that are let in. But central midfield players can be quietly effective.
Well, maybe someone like Petit, he was rated, but compared to Vieira, he wasn't rated, but he was absolutely pivotal, so maybe that's not quite fair.
Mm. You'd have to put, just because the players that he played with that were so much better than him on paper, I mean, Ray Parlour, he's hardly underrated because we all know the value of him, but I would say in that, I mean, there's a few shouts of it, but Ralph, I mean, Lauren, I mean, no one rates a right back. I mean, the guy was a killer, like a stone cold murderer. That penalty against Tottenham where he just looks at whoever it was. Was it Walker at that time?
It
was a penalty
remember.
Against Tottenham, a late one, 80 something minute. And
Stillman, who was in goal for Tottenham the day that Lauren rolled the ball? Robinson? Was he?
It was Walker. I think it was Ian Walker, but I'm deferring to you. But that, I mean, just the guy was a killer, and he was so hard as well. And he did.
Well, I mean, there is that incredible photo of him throttling a terrified Phil Neville. Like, it's impossible to think of Phil Neville without thinking of him being absolutely terrified that his life was going to end on the pitch in front of all his home fans. His brother, would his brother cry? He probably would.
I'd love to do that one day when Phil Neville's doing Match of the Day or something, just in the studio at the back of the room, just bring Lauren in. And just see Phil Neville freeze live on air.
What was the show where they used to recreate the incidents? Was it the Badil and Skinner?
Oh, Fantasy Football,
Phoenix from the Flames, yeah. Yes. And they would recreate those moments where they get, like, Liam Brady to score the goal at White Hart Lane and what have you. But that would be amazing, just bring out Lauren to strangle Phil Neville.
I met Lauren in Ibiza in a club called DC10, if anyone knows
listen,
that.
Fucking...
It's a great start to a story, isn't it?
It was a... I think he was in a better state than I was, but
right.
I was the only one... There's lots of ravers who are more interested in Carl Cox or whatever. But I'm like, no, you don't understand. You don't understand what he did to, like, Phil Neville. So he seemed appreciative of it. So
was he on it? Like,
no, he wasn't. I'm not saying that I was, but I'm saying that he wasn't. I think he
right.
He seemed to be enjoying himself. Yeah. From but
he wasn't like doing big box, small box, big box.
Box, small box, penalty box, penalty box. No, it wasn't him.
All right, we've got time for two more. So, we've got one here from this little man. Hi.
What are your top three favourite players you would buy in the summer transfer window?
Oh.
Ooh.
There's a question.
We found our new David Dean.
Do we have as much money as we want to spend, and can it be completely unrealistic? So we have the money that we had at the start of last season. So, you know, not a huge amount.
Oh,
okay. So,
three players.
Three players.
I mean, someone shouted Harry Kane. Now, that would be funny. But then you'd have to have Harry Kane in your team.
Mm. I've been waiting for three seasons for Harry Kane to be a one-season wonder. It's quite annoying.
He's one of those three-season wonders, don't worry.
I was looking at him the first year going, no way. No way that guy's going to do that.
Michael Ricketts.
Yeah, Michael Ricketts. Yeah, exactly. And it's quite annoying how good he is.
Mm. It's upsetting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But I think we do. We need a striker, so who are we going to buy?
I'm upset that Man United are going to buy Antoine Griezmann. It looks for all the world.
I'm not really that upset by it.
Are you not?
No, because he's going to play with Mourinho, who plays with eight defenders, and maybe he'll, you know...
I just feel a bit upset that they'll have Griezmann, Pogba, Martial. We used to have all the good young French players.
Yeah.
What happened? Where did it go wrong?
Well, maybe we'll get Mbappe.
Yeah.
Sorry. So... who would we buy? Who's a
Mbappe is the kind of player we would have got 15 years ago.
Okay, I'm going to say him, Mbappe, because he looks like he's going to be the real deal. And
that would be.
I think we'd all chip in a tenner or 20 quid if we could make that happen, if it was out of our budget.
Yeah, all the money we got on the season ticket reductions, plow that back into Mbappe.
Straight back in. Who else? Anyone else got any good ideas?
I'd still take Higuain, unless his knees collapsed or something like that. But
But I think he's eaten quite a lot of pizza and pasta. I think there's a girth to him now that wouldn't necessarily lend itself to mobility. So if you're frustrated by Giroud...
He fits in well, don't worry about it.
You know, he winters well, as they say. Dybala, that's a good shout, isn't it?
Yeah. We were linked with him, weren't we, for ages? Do you remember?
We've been linked with everyone.
I know. Lewandowski. Again, I'm not saying no. I just can't really engage. I just sort of think that feels like fantasy. I can't see him leaving Bayern Munich to come to Arsenal.
I watched the Italian Cup final recently and just marvelled about how dirty Chiellini is. And it's so much fun to watch when it's not against your team. He's so dirty. It's brilliant. And I also still think that we should be breaking the bank to try and bring Owen Coyle to the club. that's just a personal thing. I'd like to see him as manager one day because I think he could do a job.
Yeah, he's in his shorts. Okay, Right, we're going to have one more question. I'm going to go down here. And we'll do it, and then we can all have a beer and stuff like that. Okay, here we go.
Being a pessimist as I am...
always end on a high, guys. Always end on a high.
How does the club spin Wenger's contract, which we all believe has already been signed, if we fail to win on Saturday evening?
I mean, that's unlikely. It's unlikely that we won't win.
It's unlikely.
I'm about to break James's leg here now. Yeah.
It's a hell of a job, that, isn't it?
You know, the only thing they can do, really, as far as I can see, is A, announce Sanchez and Ozil are staying with new contracts, and B,
P.S.
land a huge player. Like, it's the only way that they could sell it or soften the blow to people is to land a really huge marquee player. Somebody who people will go, oh, wow. Like, who? Yeah, at long last. Hatem Trabelsi will be an Arsenal player.
But they'd have to have that ready to go. They'd have to have done it already, effectively, right?
Yeah.
Because they'll have to say something about Arsenal. I don't know, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yeah, no later than Wednesday.
Someone who's champing at the bit to play in the Europa League.
Mm. Well, you can do it. I mean, Chelsea signed Kante without European football. Pogba came to United with European football or with Europa League. So it's about money. It's not impossible, but it's whether or not we have the ability to go out and do that kind of a deal. I'm a little bit dubious.
I mean, speaking personally, the thing is, if we win, which, you know, who knows if we will or not, but if we do, I will be, if Arsene Wenger announces that he's going to stay, I will still feel sad about that because I will be like, that was a great opportunity to go on a high. And the awful thing about this season is, if it ends in defeat in the final and he does go, then arguably the greatest manager in our history is leaving on a low. Yeah. Mm. And I find that depressing.
Yeah, it would be a shame if that's the way that it ended. But
To end things on a bit of a high, though, I hate seeing... For all of the faults of Wenger, I hate seeing him when he looks stressed and ill. I hate it. And I really like seeing when he's happy. And when at the end of the Hull Cup final in 2014, he looked genuinely happy for pretty much the first time in ages.
Yeah.
And I think the man needs a bit of happiness.
Yeah. Lucas Podolski came along and spoiled it by like covering him with beer.
But in terms of the question, I think the expectations have been managed downwards a bit already, saying he already said, well, top four wasn't like the be-all and the end-all. So maybe there'll be a bit of that going on as well.
All right. Any thoughts, Tyle? Or are you staying well the fuck away from that one?
No, I mean, we can sit here and discuss it because it matters to us. I genuinely don't think that the board, with respect to the youngster here, I don't think they care, let's say it that way, as opposed to no Fs have been given in the boardroom at all about what we think about it. They'll announce it because they'll announce it, and don't forget the famous, you know, we thank you for your interest in our affairs. I think that's how it's seen. So apart from when Ivan Gazidis is brought out to spin a tale which is always expertly reported on Arseblog, cheers to him for that. When he goes along, and we get the same pithy quotes each time, I don't think the board or the manager care enough about what is being said. If they did, then something would have been done about it by now. Like Alex Ferguson said the other day, you know, he's applauding Wenger's stubbornness. It's like an entire army shouting at the moon, and I don't think what we think is making a great deal of difference, which is a shame because it should do, but I don't think it is. So that's my slightly pessimistic take on what's going to happen. I think he'll sign, and I don't think if 100,000 people stood outside the room and said, please don't, I don't think it'll make any difference.
All right, well, we'll see, but hopefully that is something that's announced after we lift the trophy this season. I know some people are dismissive of the FA Cup, but it's a competition, it's a tournament that I grew up with. My first real Arsenal experience is watching watching us lift the cup. So I love the cup. Obviously, I want us to win it on Saturday. And hopefully that will go some way to changing the mood or providing some clarity. And it will be a nice way to finish what has been a difficult season, I think.
Yeah, we've got to put that on the back burner. Think about the game. Get behind the team. You never know.
We'll sort it out next week. So look, thank you to all of you for coming out tonight. It's a beautiful night. The night is young.
Well, indeed.
It is, as young as James. Thanks a million for coming. We really appreciate the support. We also really appreciate you downloading and listening to the podcast every week. It's been an interesting season. It's not always been easy, but I hope you've enjoyed the shows. And it's great to see you here. We really do appreciate the support. And we'll keep it going during the summer. Thanks a million. Let's stick around, have a couple of beers. And that's
thank
it.
You to Tayo and Jim as well.
To our guests. Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks a million.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.